And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Blumenthal. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for asking and thanks for having me. Hope you and your listeners are well, too.
Thank you. Well, I know yesterday President Biden wasted no time signing executive orders, and I wanted to talk about a few of them this morning. I know one of the big things he's obviously pushing for good reason, is protecting people from the pandemic, getting people vaccinated as much as possible. The only question I have about this is I think it's a very it's a great goal. I love the idea of 100 million people getting vaccinated in his first 100 days. But is it plausible? I mean, I look at, for example, Stanford reporting earlier this week that last week they turned away hundreds of people because we ran out of the Moderna vaccine, for example. We're hearing about shortages all across the country with the vaccine. So how can we possibly get to a goal like that if we don't even have the vaccines available?
There's no question, Melissa, that it will take a different kind of approach than we saw under the previous administration. And President Biden's words yesterday were about hope and healing. He gave those words new meaning. Frankly, it brought tears to my eyes. And I felt the promise of a new beginning in the face of all the grief and pain that we've seen. And certainly President Biden wants a new era in vaccine production. You're absolutely right. We need more doses of the vaccine. We need an education campaign to instill faith and confidence, and we need a distribution infrastructure that will get it out to people. Producing the vaccine is meaningless unless it gets into people's arms, and that will take storage, transportation, trained workers that we don't have enough of right now. So it will take a major national effort by the federal government, not just saying, oh, the states will handle it, which has been the past approach. It will really require a massive commitment that we haven't seen so far.
Now, the only thing with it is I guess I'm confused, and I don't know if you can clarify it at all, is it's very confusing when you hear that Pfizer and Moderna are literally ripping these things out like crazy. I mean, they are producing millions of doses. And it's just weird to me. I know that, like, we're very anxious, obviously, to get the vaccine. I just think it's interesting that we are just not seeing the doses. Like, for example, you know, we were so worried about people even wanting to get the vaccine. And now we've got people interested. They're lining up like crazy to get it. And we just don't have the product. And that's where it's a little confusing. Like, it's being made. I just don't know why it's not being distributed.
You have a right to be confused, Melissa, because you've been told everything just fine, right? And everything isn't just fine. More needs to be produced. You mentioned millions produced, but over what period of time? And we need more produced more quickly, but also distributed. And some states still have backlogs of doses of vaccine that they haven't used because they haven't focused on the vaccination of people. You know, the vaccines are fine, but they have no meaning unless they're put into people's arms through vaccination.
Correct.
And that has to be part of the task.
We're talking to Senator Richard Blumenthal this morning. And something else, Senator, I noticed in one of the executive orders, which I knew this would probably happen, was President Biden wants to bolster the DACA program, protecting children who are brought here to the United States, which is fine. But my question here is, I think we're moving towards a future where a lot of jobs are becoming automated. We've got robots that are going to be doing these jobs permanently. I think it is safe to say that we have millions of people who lost their jobs because of the pandemic. And I do think there's a concern where maybe the approach that President Trump had used wasn't correct. But I do think the biggest thing he was trying to do was to make sure that we could save American jobs for Americans. So, you know, what can we do to be sure that we're at least having people come into this country legally and with the right process, and to make sure that Americans are still getting the jobs firsthand because we were born here? I just had a question about that.
What's your question?
how do we make sure that people are not having like jobs robbed from them from people just illegally coming into our country?
Oh, okay. I thought you were asking about the DACA program.
No, I knew he would bolster that, and I think it makes sense. You know, they're here. I think it's awful to just rip families apart and move them away, and what we saw at the borders was atrocious. But I'm curious, you know, if we're just going to kind of go back to the way things are, it does mean Americans are losing their jobs, and in the wake of what happened with COVID, it's even more Americans out of jobs. So I was just curious, like, what we're doing to make sure that we're not putting more Americans in a place where they have a harder time even keeping a job or even getting one.
Just to be clear, the DACA program relates to young people who were brought to this country as infants.
Correct.
It's the only country they've ever known. English is the only language they speak. They're in our schools. They're doing high-quality jobs. And there's a general consensus that DACA young people should be given an opportunity to stay, a path to citizenship with proper checks on whether they have criminal records and whether they're employed and so forth.
Correct.
On the broader topic of border security, certainly there needs to be some border security. We need to make sure people can't just come across the border. And the effort to provide jobs to people born in this country, we should be enhancing the Made in America program, which I've sought to advocate, make all our defense products, as many as possible products in general, in America, rather than rewarding companies for outsourcing through our present tax structure, which provides them, in fact, tax credits, deductions for the expenses of sending those jobs overseas. So I think there's a lot we can do to keep jobs in this country. You're absolutely right. We should make a major effort to keep jobs in this country, and I'm hoping that President Biden will do it.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, I really appreciate you coming on this morning. I know we'll talk again next week. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Wonderful. See you then. Thanks.
Sounds good.
A voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Dr. Brown. I'm very excited to talk to you. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, Melissa?
Oh, you know, I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much. Got a lot going on here. Of course, a lot of people anxious to get their COVID vaccine. I thought you, if anyone, would be very excited to hear that.
Yes, I am very excited. And it's so important that people get vaccinated.
I agree. I totally agree. The only thing I was going to ask you, and I don't know if it's something that I should, if I should reach out to like Griffin directly, but I'm sure you've heard, obviously, the appointment debacle is crazy, trying to make an appointment for 75 plus. People are calling the 800 number. I've had a couple of people write into me, though, and say that if you go to Griffin's website, you can book your appointment there. Do you know anything about the appointment process or ways that people can book to have it done locally? Because even if people get through the 800 number, they're being sent to East Hartford, which doesn't really work.
Yes. And interesting enough, yes, there's actually three ways to book. There's VAMS. So that's the government website, and you can get that through the DPH website, the Connecticut DPH website. You can actually go through 211. That's probably the 800 number that you're talking about, or 211 or the 800 number. And then the third way is, yes, you can go to the Griffin website, and we actually have a call center, you know, in which they are not only taking – and, again, expect a little bit of wait, but they're able to set up the appointment at that time. So you actually call them, and they'll be able to set up an appointment, and they'll be able to set it up at one of our vaccination centers.
Okay, that's awesome. So people can call. Do you happen to have that number on hand? If not, I could give it to people. I'll just look it up on the Griffin website.
I do not.
That's okay.
They can, again, it's pretty readily available at our website.
Okay, perfect.
And then obviously, if you put it on your website, that would be fantastic. And again, our goal is to get as many people as we can vaccinated who fit into the 1A and the 75 and older category.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. So I will look for that number, folks, and I will get that for you to call into the help center and make sure that you can get your appointments. And what's nice is, like you were mentioning, Dr. Brown, people want to be able to go to either like the Shelton sites, Griffin. They want to go where it's close by because it's kind of crazy to ask these people to drive up to East Hartford. Like it's
absolutely.
Just, it's insane. So
absolutely.
I'm glad.
And again, I mean, we're doing about 1,000 plus vaccinations a day. I can tell you that our busier times are early mornings and probably later evenings. But again, we're there the entire day. We have plenty of vaccinators. We've increased the amount of people who are helping people register. So there is definitely capacity there.
Awesome. Okay, perfect. So I will look up that number when we're done here, and I will get that out to people. Thank you. We appreciate that because I know people really want to book their appointments. And speaking of that, a couple people have asked, do you have to book your second appointment, or after you're there, do they book it on site, or does someone call you? How does that work?
So what we're recommending is if you do go through the VAM site, you'll get a second email after you're done to schedule a second appointment. So you can either do it through VAMs on that initial one, and then you'll do the second one pretty much right after. Just be careful. People have been – so it's depending on which vaccine you get, which both are very effective. If you get the Moderna, it's 28 days, and if you get the Pfizer, it's 21 days after the initial. VAMS has a tendency to have little bugs in it, unfortunately, as probably a lot of people know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure it fits within that 21 or 28 days, given sort of the little bit of delay. That shouldn't be an issue, but it should be. So there's a lot of confusion about this. It should be after those times, so it has to be after the 21 days or after the 28 days. It does not need to be on the 21 or on the 28. And I know the CDC does say, well, there's a three-day grace period. Honestly, this is a booster shot. So any time after that 21 or 28, you know, preferably if you get it within the month, then that's actually optimal.
Okay. All right. That actually is really good to know, because I know a lot of people were worried, like, if we have a snow day and that was our appointment, do we miss it? Okay. That's good to know. There's
a
little flexibility.
It is a booster shot. So what it is it truly is a booster shot to boost your immune system. So since you already have some immunity from that first shot, it's boosting it up to that 95% or around 95% efficacy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Brown is here this morning. Now, Dr. Brown, as you know, the 75-plus category, that's actually a lot of our listeners fall into that category. And I've gotten a lot of questions in regards to when can I hug my grandchildren again? Like, there are people who had grandchildren, great-grandchildren born in 2020. They still haven't even met them yet. They haven't seen their kids. So if they get the vaccine, there have been different reports out there as to when you could be normal again. When can they be normal again?
So there is a lot of controversy on this.
Yeah.
And if we had more time, I would explain the science of what the vaccine is, but I'll spare you from this and your listeners at this point. But the bottom line is that, you know, vaccines, in particular this vaccine, which is probably one of the best vaccines we've had, well, is the best, you know, best efficacy for a vaccine we've ever had in human history.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a really good vaccine. There has been some confusion about the fact that if you get the vaccines, you know, you can still spread the virus. I have to tell you that risk would be extremely, extremely low, if not non-existent. I mean, that's the whole reason why we're getting the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people can be cautious. I think the whole wearing masks is going to continue, and I think there's policy in the aspect that not everybody's been vaccinated. But I think you can at least limitly try to help with this, and sort of my opinion in this, to say I think you can feel a lot more comfortable visiting with your family after you've been vaccinated twice.
Okay.
And then just so you know, Melissa, it's actually twice and then at least 2 weeks after your second vaccination is when you're going to be good to go.
Cleared. Okay. So around 2 weeks after, you can cautiously start, you know, reconnecting with your family.
Yes. I don't want to go against my colleagues in the CDC or,
right.
or the state, but I would, I could tell you personally, I would be very comfortable. And I've been vaccinated, been 2 weeks. I hugged my parents. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm happy for you, actually.
Go.
That's a really beautiful thing. Now, really quick, I know, God, if I could talk to you for an hour, I would, and I would love that. But one more thing. The big news earlier this week was the fact that Moderna got recalled. I think it was in California, also possibly in Europe. What can you tell us about that? Of course, people are now nervous that my own sister got the Moderna vaccine, and she's like, Melissa, what's going on? And I'm like, it's Dr. Brown.
So listen, I expected this to happen. I mean, this is what you would expect from, you know, normal, normal. This is sort of the nuances sometimes with medical devices, even medications and even vaccinations. And we're monitoring and we have to watch closely what's happening and what can potentially be done. Again, as far as I'm concerned, you know, this is why we make sure that we document badges, and if there's anything that's related to you, then your lot, so when you actually do get a vaccine, it's actually very specific. We know exactly what lot, we know exactly what issue, and I have to say that manufacturing is really good in the United States and around the world, but there's always some sort of nuance that's occurred there. So I would, again, for those of you who've received the Moderna or the Pfizer, I wouldn't be worried about it. I think if there was any issue, then you would be contacted.
I mean, is that kind of why also it seems like every person that gets the vaccine, you sort of wait 15 to 20 minutes, like right after?
Right.
Okay.
To make sure that you're there. And again, listen, manufacturing processes are not perfect. And even if you, I think we've talked about numbers before, I mean, they're producing millions and millions of vaccines.
Doses, yeah.
And you know what? And one small little, you know, less than a 1% error in that process could lead to some changes and it could lead to a recall. Mm-hmm. Again, I would not, that is normal. I would not be worried that, you know, Moderna is not effective. I think, you know, the people who would be affected is relatively low.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Brown, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And again, anyone who is listening, I will get you guys that number for Griffin Health. I so appreciate all your help, Dr. Brown, always. Thank you.
My pleasure, Melissa. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. Chase and I were actually at the zoo on my day off on Monday, and it was glorious. It was so nice.
It was a great day. I'm sorry I missed you. I went looking around, but, you know, everybody with the masks on all the same.
I was hiding. I came in because here's the thing, Greg, is I tried to stay honestly socially distanced from as many people as possible, not just because of the pandemic, but Chase is still mask training. He would take it on and off and on and off. And I just tried to stay away from everyone because I know at one point Lisa said, you know, where are you? We'll come find you. And I was like, oh, I left already. But I think I was with the wolves or something. I just didn't want to make anyone uncomfortable because Chase is really, he's still getting it together with the mask and everything. And I'm proud of him. But I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable, so I just stayed away.
Well, we had a good crowd that day, and again, I'm so happy to see everybody again.
I know, I love
it. You know, using their masks, staying social distance, and that's really what we'd love to see, people come out and have a good day at the zoo, mm-hmm. but also still staying safe, which is really what most important.
Well, and it was cool, Greg, because you had mentioned on the show, I think a few weeks ago, that with the cold weather, some animals really, like, come out more. Like the wolves were up against the fences, the tigers were out in full force. Like they were putting on a show. It was awesome. It was very cool.
Yeah, it's again the weather. These animals. We talked about this before. The zoo looks at animals that are happy in the climate that we have. And when the summertime is, they lay down, they relax. And in the wintertime, it's their time. You know, mm-hmm. they have the fur. They have the history, and they love the winter. Now I don't really want more snow, you know, but having snow with the animals, the tigers, the amber leopards, the wolves, they love having snow.
So
I think we can have one or two more snowfalls. That'd be okay.
Yeah. Well, I know that one of the things that people still can't check out right now, but there's a lot going on inside, is the rainforest building. I pass it every time I leave the monkey area. And I know even though it's closed, you do have some new residents in there. Tell us about them.
We do, and we're adding animals to the rainforest building. Again, most of this is to keep our populations the way they're supposed to be. So if we have a golden lion tamarin there, it should have another golden lion tamarin. So we've added a golden lion tamarin, which is one of the most endangered species of primates in the world. They're from Brazil, and they only live in a little tiny pocket down there. The little golden monkeys are, they're wonderful animals. We've had a lot of success with having babies over the years. We just added a male to the group there. We also added a new sloth. That the golden lion tamarin actually his name is Leo, and the sloth we just added is Rhubarb, and it's a female sloth that's gone in there. They don't move around very much. It's in there with Jabba, and they're kind of just hanging out. But we are. We had a new ocelot this past year. And we have a new Geldes monkey coming in. And then we're also looking at, as we've been closed, what can we do? What new things can we put in there? We're still working on those things. And we're really hoping that the rainforest can be opened up this season. Going back in history of this building, this building was built in 1956, So it's a very old building. It was built right after during the time when people were doing a lot of building around the country. So the zoo was, they were looking for something. So this, the it was called the Bird and Mammal Building back then. It, when it was constructed back in '50s, it was considered a state of the art for exhibiting animals.
Wow.
For some of your listeners that are out there that remember the old Bird Mammal Building, or we also call it the Monkey House, state-of-the-art is not what I would have called it. back then it was. Back then it was.
Yeah.
Back then it had areas that could be sanitized very well. They were small cubicles. People could see them through this expanded metal fronts. It really, in today's standards, is not something we'd ever build again. But back then, it was considered state-of-the-art.
Wow.
And then in 1992, so we're looking at a 30-year anniversary of the rainforest renovation, we did a complete gut job. For people to watch the shows on TV, we actually did a complete gut job. The entire building was demolished, and we made the rainforest out of it. But before that, that was actually where I started my first job at the zoo as a volunteer. It was mopping the floor in the old Bird and Mammal Building, the old Monkey House.
Oh, how funny.
And even though, and if I'll ask again, I'll ask some of the older people that I talked to about what they remember the old Monkey House. What they remember the most about that, it had a distinct odor to it. because there wasn't the fans, there wasn't the air conditioning systems, it really was just a box.
Yeah.
And
wow.
We had many, many animals in there. And at one point, the tigers were even in there before we built a new area for the tigers. We actually had tigers exhibited inside the old Monkey House.
Oh, wow.
So it was interesting times. But my first working with animals was in that building, and it was challenging, very, very challenging.
Yeah,
I
thought you were going to say, Greg, that the thing that people remembered about the Monkey House was how clean the floors were because of what a great job you did.
Well, that was true. That is true. And I can tell you right now that I still have the chops to mop a floor very, very well.
From way
back when. So the Monkey House, the Bird Mill Building, going from there to what it is now, the Rainforest Building, we're really proud of that. It's a South American exhibit. We're going to continue working inside there and really hoping that people will be able to get into that this year. Again, we're really being very, very optimistic about that. I think it's arguably one of the most places that people really like to go into. I love to have people go in there this time of year because of wintertime. We are hoping right now, again, to do some changes in there before we reopen. So when people come in, they'll see something maybe they haven't seen before inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. It's really, really exciting. Well, Greg, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And we'll talk again next week.
Take care.
Thanks. You too, Greg.